Welcome to the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast, your best source for information, news, tips, and tricks to get you off the ground running and earn success with your custom apparel decorating business. So get ready to soak up some knowledge. Now, here are your hosts, Mark and Mark.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast. My name is Mark Stevenson from Coldesi.
And this is Mark Vila from Coleman & Company, and we've got a guest today, as you can see if you're watching. If you're listening, you have no idea there's a guest.
Right.
But we're here with Mark Blitnikoff with First Amendment Tees, and he's here to talk to us about his business, the success of his business, contract printing, a lot of different things, right?
Yeah, honestly, it's just another part of our journey to find as many people named Mark as we can in the custom apparel business, and he fit the bill. So he happened to be in town.
Is this our third episode with a third Mark?
I think so.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's crazy.
Okay. My brother Mark. This is my other brother Mark.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I like that. Good way back machine comment. I like that. All right, so the reason that that Mark is here is because not just has he been a Coleman & Company and Coldesi customer for a long time, but he's actually done it. So I'm going to let you tell your story in a minute, but this is a guy that, you know, started a custom t-shirt business, right? Started very small, managed to build up a real business doing custom t-shirts, and then added a contract DTG business on top of that. So it's kind of what I know a lot of you guys want to do out there. I know that there are a couple of people listening that are wondering if they can do it, are wondering if they can actually start a business, or like, do you have to be a rocket scientist? Do you have to, you know, drive, you know, you have to do motocross competitively? You know, do you have to be a paintball aficionado? You know, the answer to that is maybe. I don't know. So, Mark, why don't you say hi and tell us a little bit about what you do now.
My name is Mark Blitnikoff from Erie, Pennsylvania. I am the owner and president of First Amendment Tees, Contract-DTG, and My Custom-T-Shirt. My story goes back 2010. We started with our first printer from, Coldesi. It was we started unconventionally. Most people start out silk screening and maybe embroider or something along those lines. We kind of went unconventional. We went backwards. We started with a DTG machine and then started adding other services as that went. I started in my basement, probably like a lot of you guys, just printing, and you know, I was in another job field, and I just woke up one day and said I was going to make t-shirts, and here we are 8.5 years later, and yeah. You know, three companies later and still going strong and growing, you know, year over year. Our first printer that we bought is still in service today. How we got into it was we started out and I said, hey, I want to make funny t-shirts. And that's why I bought the printer, was I wanted to make funny t-shirts, but I didn't want to make 1,000 of them because I looked into silkscreen equipment. I looked into other methods and vinyl, and you know, it just wasn't what I wanted to get into. But I love the full color aspect of it. I love to be able, you could print one. And so that was like our gig. Like, I'm going to build a website. We're going to make funny t-shirts, and that's how we're going to get in business.
Yeah.
And we're still doing that, but that's not where we went, you know? It completely changed.
So I got to say, like, 2010, DTG was hard.
Yes.
Like, it was really, you know, DTG wasn't brand new, but we were still selling one of the first two printers, I think.
Yeah.
It was the HM1.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, they were certainly less expensive, and like, it was the only way to go digital back then, really.
Yeah.
And, but you... It was a much more technical job. Like, you know, like now, you know, it's pretty well developed.
It's very sorted. The inks are different. Back then, I mean, you guys had a leader in that machine, I thought, back then. I come from a manufacturing background, and I thought you guys had the leader in all the machines that were out at that time. And like I said, we still use those machines today. So, I mean, it was one of those things that I'm glad that we made the right choice. I made the right choice.
Yeah.
And we stuck with it. And, I mean, it's been paying dividends ever since. So.
And I mean, there's been a lot of stories like you with people who got into digital when digital was starting off, like coming yeah. ahead of the curve. And we have a lot of customers actually that own you know, an original kiosk or an HM1 or an original Viper.
Yeah.
So these are DTG machines from, you know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever it might be. And they did really well when they pushed through the tech side of it.
Yep.
So they came in when it was more tech heavy, pushed through it, and it kind of it builds you like good backbone for really like understanding the hardships of business in and of itself when you're at the newer end of a technology.
Yeah, well, they say if you survived a business, you start a startup business in 2010, 2011, if you survived through that, you can survive anything.
Yeah.
And it's
that's actually pretty true.
Call, I didn't know that at the time. You know, like I said, I went from a job making almost $100,000 a year and, you know, and not having to worry in the world. And, you know, it was corporate America. And then I was like, you know what? Screw this. I'm done. I want to make t-shirts. And I was like, I didn't know that the market was horrible. I didn't know that.
Just that.
It's a terrible itself, time to do this.
The economy itself time to start was. A business.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was good. Like, you know, I was going to school for, I requested a layoff. I was going to college for mechanical engineering. And, you know, I was just like, but then the business had started taking off and it was like, I had to, you know, I couldn't continue school. Like I had to stop going to college and I had to focus full time on business, you know? Yeah.
So, from, you got your HM1.
Yep.
When was the, how long did it take you to go in the black to actually like make money?
I had the machine, I got it in June, and I mean, there was two months of like nothing but playing with it, learning the software, playing with pre-treating, because this is before there was pre-treat machines, and you know, we were still doing a Wagner spray gun and a heat press, and you know, and then it was like figuring out the process. And then I kind of figured it out. I was like, well, I can't have the same machine that's doing the pre-treat, doing the curing of the ink. And I needed to have, like, I saw the bottleneck of what was the production. So I added a couple heat presses. And then, you know, and then it ends up, then we end up adding another machine because you're only, in all reality, you only get paid to put a print on a shirt. You don't get paid to pre-treat it. You don't get paid to fold it. You don't get paid to mail it. You don't make any money. There's no value-added services except for putting a print on the shirt. So I needed to, you know, I needed to establish a base cost shop rate.
Right.
You know, we were doing it in the basement, and then it overcome my whole house and like my first floor. And, you know, it was just like, this is enough. So I got my first shop. It was a little over 1,000 square foot. And, you know, we had got another machine. So we had two printers and we had actually set up like a pre-treat area and a stock room and stuff. And was moving it out of my house was probably one of the best things, you know, because I had to separate work from, you know, work from home. It was like, it was kind of overcoming. And it was like the whole learning process of doing it at home. And, you know, and trying to figure things out, and but being able to work anytime I wanted, walking downstairs, which just wasn't too conducive to like a real established lifestyle.
But moving out of your house, did that extra financial burden like put pressure on you to be more successful, or were you already there and just kind of made more room?
It was kind of a combination of both. We were doing a lot more work. We kind of fell into contract printing at that point. We had some customers that needed prints done on a fulfillment basis. So that's kind of where we made the big jump from just doing local t-shirts for, you know, groups and clubs and friends and stuff like that. And, you know, but then actually someone finding you, you know, and making a website so that people can actually find you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the yellow pages and the white pages, that's not how people find you, you know? And even in 2010, like, business was different then. So, like, we had built a website. It was horrible, you know, but it was functional and explained what we did. So that's how someone found us to do actual contract printing that was out of our out of our state.
So was that like a break, a bit of a break?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was establishing, you know, having a website and establishing in legitimizing who you were, not just a brick and mortar waiting for someone to walk through your door. It's someone that's cruising the internet at 3 o'clock in the morning, finding someone that does what you do and specializes in what you do, and then needing your service. So that's kind of how we got into the contract printing.
Yeah,
and that was kind of the game changer for us. Was then I started seeing the value and where, you know, there's a real need for this. Not just printing, you know, for a club or a couple softball shirts and stuff like that. It was providing a service, you know, whether it's someone that owns a restaurant or someone that owns, you know, or maybe a softball team or someone that's maybe in Michigan and they don't have that type of printing locally.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we grew, is people needing our service.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that we talked about over lunch, is how do you market your business? And you know, one of the things I did immediately on the phone, a smart move that you made was kind of to put that contract DTG word, like, on the new website, because still today, if you search for contract DTG printing, you're the number one organic search.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so a great argument for, you know, you were early in this, right? You made the right content on the site, got people to find you, and that just kind of...
Yeah, well, actually, we didn't have a contract site for probably about 3 years. Mm-hmm. So we piggybacked everything, the contract printing, the everything, off of fat-t.com.
Right.
And so we really didn't have a contract. We offered it through First Amendment Tees, you know, through our website, but that's not really how we, you know, that's really how they found us. And then, you know, then we decided, like, hey, because, you know, of the volume, we need to separate the business. So we have our local, and then we had to have it legitimized, because then you're also confusing customers. You have retail customers trying to get contract pricing, and contract customers scared about retail pricing, and it just didn't mesh. Yeah. So we had to separate the two customers. That was our defining moment of setting that up.
Well, I see this, like, your story has a classic example of when we discuss, like, the lifetime value of a customer.
Yeah.
Because, so what you had learned probably early on in your business is, you know, how to talk with customers, how to deliver good customer service. You took time to learn the product or the methods, so you made a good t-shirt. And then when you had that opportunity, when you got that first break to do some big jobs over and over again, you were able to keep that customer. And I think that's like a key thing that happens with small businesses, is that and no matter what they are, I mean, of course, in our industry as well, but if they're a restaurant or you're a plumber or an AC, if you don't know what you're doing, if you don't know how to treat customers right, if you don't know how to actually run it as a business, then when you get the breaks, you just miss them.
Yep.
Yeah. And if you wouldn't have known what you were doing, you wouldn't
first order, and then you're done. Yeah.
And then, even though your retail customer is a different customer than your contract customer, a contract customer is more educated, already in the business. A retail customer is uneducated in that form of printing, or, you know, as far as that pricing, or why does it cost this? You still have to treat those customers. And we try to go a little extra. We try to do a little bit more than, say, our competitors. Mm-hmm. You know, the personal touch, the calls, the, hey, you can text me anytime, day or night. You know, you can have my personal phone number. We don't really shut out our customers if there's a problem or anything like that. But we, you know, I've always said that there's no substitution, you know, for being second best. We will not survive, and I've instilled that since day one. You know, we tried to offer a better service. We try to offer, you know, better artwork, a better hands-on approach to handling the orders. How do we present them to our customers? Things that we do. There's a lot of things that we do that I know other people don't do.
Yeah.
And I think that's been a lot of how we've gotten to where we are, is because of what we offer.
Yeah. It that's great. I mean, it's literally, you just went through like 5 episodes of the podcast.
Yeah.
So it's great. About. And one thing that you mentioned that I don't want to go over too quickly is that voice you use when you talk to your customer, because we go through that with Cold Essing, Coleman & Company all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're always talking to our customers about, you know, pick your niche. It might be a local market, it might be cheer, it might be baseball teams, you know, whatever it is. Pick your niche so you can talk that language to those people. You know, because if your customers are startups, like they've never done anything before, that's a completely different conversation from somebody that, you know, is buying, you know, 1,000 shirts every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, and having the industrial, the commercial conversation with one customer, and the what color do you want for your t-shirt for grandma with the other customer, that's hard to do if you're talking from the same spot.
Yeah, you have to juggle that. I mean, I have one customer that lives in Indonesia. He's been a customer since the early days. I have no idea what he looks like. He places an order 5 days a week, 52 weeks out of the year, pays me. I don't even invoice him anymore. He just invoices himself. And I'll check him. It's crazy. It's the most crazy thing.
That's great.
But, like, it's been a working relationship that we've had for eight years, I would say. You know, and it's just, but that's how we do things. You know, he can chat with me. We have WhatsApp, or we use, you know, Google Chat, or or email or whatever. But we have an open communication of, like, if something's lacking or something needs to be changed or, you know, and he's halfway around the world. So, I mean, and we do stuff like that all the time. But yeah, treating those customers and treating them right, and making sure that you do what you say and say what you do, is, it goes a long ways.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and especially because you're not going to be free of making mistakes with a customer like
Absolutely
that,
not.
Or making errors. And that's something that that a lot of small business owners struggle with, because they see it's easy to see outwardly and see the mistakes that everyone else is making, whether it's your customer delivering something to you wrong, or whether, you know, UPS doesn't deliver your shirts on time, whatever it would be.
Yep.
But it's really hard for, as a small business owner, to look inwardly and see the, all the mistakes that you've made or you're about to make.
Yeah.
And I think, like, these are lessons that people need to learn, that when you understand that you make the mistakes too, then you are just become better at building relationships, because you can forgive when others make mistakes, and you know how to react when you make a mistake.
Yeah, and we have made many mistakes, you know. Yeah. And the biggest thing is we make it right, though, you know.
Yeah.
And there are times where, you know, like, there, it's not our issue, but even then we've bent, or, you know, but there's times where you have to learn from that mistake, and you change your process, or you implement something, a checkpoint in the process to kind of eliminate some of those things. So those are the things that we've learned from too, is we've changed the process from earlier. Now we have, like, 8 steps that a shirt is checked, you know.
Yeah.
Where it used to be like, oh, we just grabbed it and we sprayed it and then we printed it and then we, same guy threw it in a bag. Now it touches different people, different sets of hands, and different visual checks. And, you know, when someone says, well, hey, I got my shirt and there's a slice right in the middle of it, it's like, okay, well, you know, we've had 8 people touch that and there was no hole.
Right.
We know that you opened the bag. Mm-hmm. And we fold the shirts a certain way. And there's little things that we do that we know if it's our fault or if it's someone else's fault.
Yeah.
You know? And there's things that you're going to learn from, like where you have holes in the armpits, or, you know, the shirt was sewn. You know, it's just, you don't know, or you don't catch it. And yeah, you make those things right, you know.
Yeah. So. And we do, Coleman & Company does the same thing.
Yeah.
Because they, I mean, you know, think about supply orders and how many cones of thread, how many packages pass through Coleman & Company. And we've got, you know, most months under a 2%.
Oh, it's under, it's less than 1%.
Less than 1% error rate.
Less than 1% error rate pretty consistently. However, they're bound to happen no matter, you know, what you do. And then we learn new processes. And also, we were talking about earlier today, the improvement of products. You know, this direct-to-garment ink that's, I don't know, roughly 15 years old, you know, roughly. The first version had, I mean, some of the smartest chemists in the world at making this stuff. It took running them through printers for 5 years to realize that if you change the parts per million of oxygen from this little bit to this little bit, that seems like nothing.
It makes
a massive difference.
I actually think it was, if you don't put sand in it,
then,
you know, it'll print much better.
We're hoping to get to that point.
I thought it was like magical fairy dust.
It is that. But you know, I'll say something else about, like, the whole, you know, making mistakes and the customer experience is, it's kind of it's the neighbor's mailbox thing. You know, if you hate your neighbor and they back out of a driveway and knock your mailbox over, it's the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
If you like your neighbor, you just go stick the mailbox back in the ground and let it go. Right? So it's the same thing. If you consistently deliver, you know, a good product, and it's packaged well, and you're going above board, and you're responsive to things, then if you do make a mistake like that, you know, you're not going to lose a customer. You know, it's just going to be, you know, no problem. What can we do to fix it in the future?
Yeah, we always make it right. I mean,
you
know, we'll have production meetings, and we'll discuss points of error or interest or things that need to be changed, you know. And I hire a good staff that will implement things on their own. If I have to step in, it's gone beyond, you know, that they haven't fixed the problem. Yeah. So I do kind of let self-starting individuals and motivated individuals, you know, run and fix their own problems.
Yeah.
Like I said, if I step in, then I'm adding a checkpoint, or I'm adding something that is, you know, it's either something that's really bad or something that really needs to be taken care of, or I want to make sure it's taken care of right type thing. So yeah,
it makes sense. I'm curious, do you have like a particular mistake, like a really big one you either made as a business owner or to a customer that stands out amongst others? How did you overcome it?
There's a couple. There was one where we had a very large contract customer where we had printed something, and it was kind of a gray area. They told us to print the same artwork as a previous job, and they said it was the same artwork, but they didn't tell us to use the new artwork, and it was like this kind of a gray area. And it was a $3,000 mistake that we had to eat, you know. And it was our fault, you know, because we should have used the new artwork. And it was something so simple, like a black line of in the artwork or something that, like, if I put them side by side, you might not even notice.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, we didn't even notice. Like, what are you talking about? You know? And so that was one of our biggest mistakes that, you know, and something we still stand by today. Like, if a customer uploads the artwork, and even if they say, like, hey, same print as the other, or same print as previous job number XYZ 2234, like, we kind of stand by that. Or that's a big glaring red flag of, like, hey, stop, raise your hand, let's get on the phone with them. Let's send them a proof, you know. Let's dig a little bit deeper, because I always tell my guys, like, hey, for you to, you know, to spend an extra minute is well worth, you know, my labor paying you an extra 5 minutes to check on something, is saves, you know, even if it's a one shirt fulfillment. You know, you got the shirt, $3. You got the ink, it's $2. You got the poly bag. You have the label, it's, you know, $3, and all that adds up. If you would have just came up to me and asked me, you know, or checked the website to make sure that the text was supposed to be white, not gray, like, if you would have took that 30 seconds and checked that, then you would have one of those things, you would have that, you know, that ability to save money, you know, over time.
Yeah, and you don't have an upset customer.
Yes.
Which, when we talk about lifetime value, they could go away. That could be just, you hit them at the right time,
the
right place. They could have been. You might not have done anything bad to them ever, but they had a really bad day, and you were the last thing that happened. And they just, you know, throw it up, and they're just like, never mind.
Yep.
And this is what you do. Saying that is the same reason we have customers that will call up here and say, just send me the same stuff I ordered last time.
Hold on. Yep.
This, and this. That's not what I ordered last time. Well, yes, it was.
Yeah,
you're right.
Two orders ago.
You know, and I've literally had that phone call myself with somebody who they just literally forgot their last order. They forgot to order something on the, so they added an extra order of bobbins for their embroidery machine. That was a second order. So I went back to their, it was an hour apart. So to them, in their mind, it was the same order. Yep. They got it the same day. It was all.
And you know who's wrong? You know who's wrong? You are.
Yeah.
I have a timestamp on this. I have an email. Like, you know, but at the end of the day, you're wrong.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
And that's why, you know, McDonald's invests in the screen that shows you your order. It's why your server at restaurants will repeat back what you ordered. Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing over and over and over again wherever you go. It's that reconfirming to the customer that you're going to deliver what they asked for, because when you start making assumptions, and then it's your fault.
It's Burger King's fault. You're way right away now.
Yeah.
That's why when you go in a biker bar, you see a girl at the bar.
Oh, you did. So, all right.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your business now.
Okay.
So, what are all the technologies that you use right now?
As far as printing services?
Yeah, yeah.
So we do, our primary is direct to garment printing. So we're a full service direct to garment printing. We do local, obviously, a lot of contract. We are probably a 75% contract printing company. And that does consist of, you know, a lot of DTG, direct to garment printing, a lot of silk screening. We have a lot of mixed orders, so it would be a DTG left chest, silkscreen back. We do a ton of those orders.
That's
interesting. We call those mixed orders. So, like, you know, where there's a shirt and have like a full color front print, and then I'll have a one color sponsor back. So we have a lot of mixed orders. I would say we've noticed that in the last, since we've upgraded our screen department to be more high volume, I've noticed in the last couple years we see a lot of mixed orders.
Okay.
In the contract side of customers.
Yeah.
Like, we see a lot of dead jump. I would say probably 20% of our jobs, you know.
Wow.
You know, anywhere from 15 to 20% of our jobs that come in now are multi-side shirts, mixed orders.
Yeah.
So,
and it's interesting because in the room that we're sitting in here, we've got a digital heat effects transfer system and a cutter for mm-hmm. heat transfer vinyl. And
a spangle machine. And an embroidery machine.
Yeah, we do have a lot going on here.
Yeah.
And specifically those two, though, I have in the conversation, even with when we first started merging these products together within the teams that sell and support here, on like what would be the point of having these two right here. And I just sat down and I said, well, we'll do the math on a single color heat transfer vinyl, like doing a lot of lettering, numbers and lettering, and doing a multicolor with a transfer. On why, like, when on mixing these two together is the perfect formula, depending on what the job is.
Yeah.
So, and like you said, a sponsor back, you know, you're not going to want to do that in really any other technology besides get that screen it yourself or contract screen it out because there's so much detail.
Yep.
So you're not going to want to weed it.
Yep. You can't sometimes.
Yeah, you can't weed it, physically can't. And then you might not want to necessarily do that with a transfer because of the size of the print.
Yeah,
you
it's going to be too costly.
It's going to be too costly to do the front and the back for the whole
We thing. Have we have a local customer that, same thing, they do embroidery. They have a very small embroidery machine, and they do vinyl. And they got a large 150 shirt order, and it was a two color front, and they weeded out all of the vinyl for this. But then they had a sponsor back, and they just like, they had a team of women, you know, and they lost their tail on this job.
Yeah.
Doing high detail, two color front, and then they started doing the back, and they said, we just can't physically. We don't have enough people, and we don't have enough time.
Yeah.
So they came to us, and they said, can you screen print this? We're like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, and that's with the importance of having some humility in what you could do for yourself, because when you become a small business owner, you think you can do everything, because you can do a lot for yourself, why.
Yep.
But it's important to decide when should you go out and contract out a job.
Yeah, it's also a perfect example of the kind of relationships that we talk about, that if you are starting a business and you're going to get digital heat FX or you're going to get a DTG printer or an embroidery machine, you are 100% going to get asked for things that you don't do every day.
Yep.
Every time somebody brings an order to somebody that's got a cutter, they want a cap or they want an embroidered logo. Every time somebody, like somebody with a DTG print, they want you to screen print jerseys or they want you to provide a cap to go with the order. So knowing people like Mark in your area or out of your area, just having a good relationship there. So you know, one day I'm going to get an order for 150 shirts. What am I going to do? I'm going to talk to this guy, get a quote, you know, and do the turnaround time. And then I'm just going to collect the money.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to sit there and try to, you know, ruin your life. I was
at that point. Like we do a lot of services back to the services. So we direct garment print, we silk screen, we pad print, we cut custom shirt vinyl, sign vinyl, embroider. We do a lot of stuff in house, and I have even learned that, you know, I get a lot of requests for like full cut die sub. You know, and just so lucky that I have a friend that does it. Mm-hmm. So we contract that out to him. It's like, I can't just keep buying equipment. I'm the dummy that bought every service. I offer more services in-house than anyone in a tri-state around me, you know. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, you need to know your limits.
Let me just say that Mark Blitnikoff does not speak for Cold Essing Quality. You should buy every piece of equipment
but there's so much that you don't do, even though you do own so much.
Yeah. I would like an Oki. There are things that I would like. I mean, I don't know how much I would use it, but I do see a niche for it, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do have to learn what you're capable of, what you're not capable of, and without putting yourself in financial duress, you know, like, you need to know your limits, you know? And
there's a balance, I think, because if you try to run an entire business only with no future off of, I'm going to have one embroidery machine and nothing else, you cap out somewhere.
Absolutely.
No matter what it is. And you might be happy with that because that's your goals. But then you make the choice, is a second or larger embroidery machine the run-up, or is a digital heat effects printer?
I feel like it should always be a pick two. I feel like you should always
absolutely.
Like, if you're going to do embroidery, get a cutter. You know, get a DFX. If you're going to do DTG, get a cutter or get an embroidery machine.
Yeah.
You know, make sure you've got some place to go. That's why I think, you know, we try to talk to everybody that we talk to literally about, like, this machine is great and it'll do tons of stuff. Day three, you're going to get a request that you're going to have to say no to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't do it. Because
the pick two, I think, is great as well.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah. I mean, embroidery is great, but there's only so many things you can embroider, and there's only so many things you can do with it. You know, I can't put a picture on the front of a t-shirt with it. You know, it's just not a feasible thing. And, you know, the Oki does it. Yeah, the DTG printer does it. So you got to kind of find your niche, and you got to find out where you fall. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the route you're going to go. And I think a vinyl cutter is definitely a huge... You know, that was our second piece of equipment we bought.
It's inexpensive, and it can sit there.
Yep.
You don't have to maintain it.
Yep.
There's a lot of great things.
Yeah, you can do jerseys and names and numbers on the back, and like that was, I think, that was our second piece of equipment that kind of, because we had the DTG machine, and then it was like, you know, I was doing softball jerseys and stuff. I needed something where it was just a one color design, and not that DTG couldn't do it, but it was like one of those things, like that was kind of the game changer of being, and then next thing you know, I'm cutting vinyl for other businesses locally.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's a couple businesses that we work for, they still don't have a vinyl cutter. It blows my mind. Like, 8 years later.
Crazy.
Yeah. Like,
that's
how do you crazy. Not have a vinyl cutter?
They're,
you know?
Like, $1,200.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For a good one.
I still have the same one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have a good amount of customers that do the digital transfers, and they're doing basically small contract work with those.
Yeah,
selling the transfers, like you mentioned, selling the vinyl transfers, and that's huge business we have plenty of people who wanted to start a t-shirt business, and they realized that just locally, they could print transfers just locally for all the shops because they want, you know, little logos on the side and tags.
Yep.
We've got our guy Corey that from Signco Designs, that it seems like a big part of his business is just doing tags
for other
with the Oki, like for doing other, like selling, like you, so you know, you want 10 shirts, customer wants their own logo on the back, no problem, rip off the old tag, you know, place the order.
We do those, we either pad print them or we do Plastel transfers or something like that, or we screen print them, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of requests for the full color neck, and I would love to be able to do it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's something because we have been getting more and more into full color or, you know, multicolor neck tags inside and stuff like that. So it's definitely something that I'm going to probably look into.
Digital just keeps growing, and as digital grows, more colors, it becomes normal. You just think you can get anything anywhere, no matter what it is, printed in full color. And that actually doesn't exist anymore.
We talk to those people all the time.
But
won't it do this? It just doesn't. Yeah. It just doesn't.
Part of why the UV printers... The compressed UV printers do well.
Yes.
It's because people want a full color print on anything.
Which
this printer can basically does.
Yeah, unless you want to print on a silicone pad or a live cat.
Yeah.
Then it's hard to keep them still.
You haven't tried a live cat?
I said it's hard to keep them still.
Oh, there you go. Well, all right. I have some other questions we'll ask here.
Okay.
One that I think about all the time, and I just put a number three, but what are like a few big mistakes that... like a t-shirt shop or an embroidery shop can make as a startup that you didn't make, but you could have made, and anything like that. Because the reason why I ask is because too many of our customers, they make really fatal mistakes early on, and then they're calling us trying to figure out how to get out of it.
The biggest thing is biting off more than you can chew and making promises you can't keep. Or buying a piece of equipment when you haven't gone to training, you haven't tested it, you haven't wash tested it, you haven't proven it. And that's the biggest failure, is like whether it's embroidery. Like, I don't know how many people I see that say, yeah, I have a 100 shirt order, but my machine doesn't come till next Tuesday or next Wednesday or 2 months from now. Or like, why are you taking orders? Like, you have to prove your process before you sell anything.
Yeah.
You don't go sell it, you know, you don't open up a burger joint and sell burgers without beef and a grill. Like,
yeah, or without ever making a burger before.
Yeah, or, yeah, even though, you know, and you can't make a grilled cheese sandwich. Like, you need to learn and prove your process. Like, you can't, yeah, you can't sell, you know, construction equipment, and you don't even have a resource for anything, you know? It's, you can't, that's the biggest thing, is I think people oversell themselves. And right now, the t-shirt industry, I think, is probably the hottest it's ever been. And there's so many competitors in my field and local and online. And I think that's, you know, everyone thinks that they can do it. And it's, I don't think, not that I'm saying that it's as easy as everyone thinks, or it's as harder than, it's harder than everyone thinks. But I think that people don't invest the time into themselves, into learning the process, and not just learning it, but actually making it right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, anyone can make a t-shirt, you know, are they doing it right? Or are they doing it, you know, are they learning about placement, you know, and making themselves some samples and wearing it and washing it, and how does it feel? And is the left chest logo in the right place? And like, I did that for months before I did anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and
I invested.
The shirt you're buying.
Yes.
Is the shirt good?
Do you, yes.
Like, are you proud to wear the shirt?
Yes.
Meaning like the quality of the actual blank.
Yeah.
And what I think about making t-shirts is the same as anything else. Like everything combines together into one, like, into similar philosophies. So you had mentioned that when we had lunch, that you had you'd race motorcycles and you do paintball, all of these things, and you make t-shirts, right? All
and
of
golf,
these things.
That's the exciting thing.
Going, and if you say, how hard is it to go play paintball? It's, I mean, anyone can do it, right? You,
absolutely.
Anyone can do it. How hard is it to hit a target on a paintball? Well, how close is it? It might be really easy.
Yeah.
How hard is it to be a champion in a paintball tournament?
Yeah.
Extremely hard. So, and I think t-shirts is the same way, is that, you know, people watch me make a video, do a video, and I'll make a t-shirt. You made it look so easy. That was easy.
Yeah.
What I just did was easy. You know, it wasn't hard.
Yeah.
Now, that's not, but I didn't also sell 150 t-shirts to somebody, get the money from them, fulfill the order, deliver,
create the artwork.
You know, it's like, that's not what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
You know, and however, that, also, that can be easy, but it can also be challenging if you're not doing it correctly. Every industry, no matter what you're doing, whether you're like racing bikes or making t-shirts, you know, on the surface they're easy. The deeper you go into it, the more you have to be a pro.
And again, being that it's probably as competitive as it's ever been, that market, everyone thinks that they can do it right now. You know, and I see people like, oh, I'll play you paintball. Going back to that,
yeah.
And I say, you have a better chance of beating Michael Jordan in basketball than you do playing me. You know, it's just that equation of same thing. Like, you know, we have people that in the contract printing world and DTG, you know, we have customers that, you know, they're a garage printer and they have a couple homemade, you know, direct to garment printers, and they, you know, they'll undercut us in price or something, you know, and it's like, okay, great. You know, next thing you know, that customer's back because their equipment's broke, or they don't have enough ink today, and they don't have enough t-shirts, or everything washed off, or, you know, so we deal with that a lot. We see a lot of customers leave and come back, you know, and we don't claim to be the cheapest, but we claim to have a great product at an affordable price, you know, and we stand behind our product. So, but we do see a lot of competitiveness right now where people are trying to undercut, and it happens in any business.
Yeah.
You know, even in your machine room business, there's people that are doing, you know, that try to undercut you guys.
But you're at a point now where you're growing.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
And it just keeps getting better and better.
Yep.
But there's more competition out there.
Yep.
How do you do that on like a daily basis? Because, you know, we get a lot of people that say, I can't compete with this guy, or I'll never compete.
So since I've been in business, just on a local level, since I've been in business, there's 7 new screen print t-shirt shops that have opened up in my city. Maybe 8.
Yeah. And so probably since one or two you've never heard of that opened.
Yes. You know? And there's probably a couple garage printers that I don't know of. But legitimately, there's seven new t-shirt places since I have opened up just in my hometown, my city, which is a city of over 100,000 people. Mm-hmm. So that's not a lot of people. And we have seven new businesses that have opened up.
Yeah.
And we still succeed in that market. But you have to be able to know what your limits are. You have to be able to offer something that someone doesn't. And not saying a service, but you have to be able to go that extra mile with the customer service. You have to be able to fold the orders and bag them. You have to be willing to help with the artwork, or you have to be, you know, you have to offer something that they don't. You know, and it's not necessarily, you don't need to fight over nickels and be the absolute cheapest. Yes, that works, but that you can't control your pricing with someone else's. You know, and granted, I can't compete, you know, with the guy that's doing 25 shirts in a garage. Like, to me, I just can't compete with that guy. And I'm not going to compete with him. That's not, but he can't compete at 100 shirts, you know, full color, or, you know, one shirt full color. Yeah. I'm the only person that does
it. You got to have some kind of a
you have to have a niche.
Whatever that is.
Well, and you bag your shirts, which is cost of, was that like a nickel
or
something like that?
Right? 4 cents.
It's a nickel.
Yep.
And so, you know, if you want it to be the cheapest out there, and you're trying to, you'd have to shave that nickel off to shave your price by a nickel.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, you know, but it's not worth a nickel what you're doing. That service that you provide, when it's in a bag, it's clean, when they have to divvy them out to say, you know, if they're buying 50 shirts and they have to divvy them out to a crowd of people, it's like, there's no stains on them. They're not messed up. They're easy to pass around. And that feels good. You want to experience that again compared to getting a torn up box.
Or no box.
Yeah, or no,
or a blue bag from the grocery store is what they're carrying their stuff out.
Scotch tape together. Yeah.
We do a lot of like local. So just an example, like our local, say spirit orders. You know, some team comes to us, and all the parents want to order gear, and you know, and say we do the t-shirts for the team. That's where we make the money, is on the spirit wear. But one thing we also do, so we create an order form for them, so that they can pass it out. You know, and all the money comes back in, and we take that order form. And then we fulfill that order for them with all the different services, whether it's, you know, direct garment printing or silk screen or embroidery, whatever it is. So, and then we take that order and we bag it for them. So all those pieces that they bought is stapled into a very nice bag, and here's their order form, so they don't have to sort it. So a lot of people don't do that for their for their spirit wear. But you know how many parents and moms be like, oh my god, you sort this for us? They come like, we just found the Ark of the Covenant, you know. They're like, oh,
that's so hard to do.
Well, they have to buy pizza and beer, and they have 10 parents in a room, and hey, who's got the largest? And but we do that, and they're like, oh my god, like, I just want to kiss you. You know how many moms like come in and like, oh my god, like, you just made my day. I don't have to sort this. Yeah. You know, and they just literally are like, Smith, Jones, and they're just handing out bags, and it's done. I just made their life easier. Yeah. So that's one thing why I get a lot of spirit wear locally, is just because I take that extra step. And for me to sort that out, it's nothing.
Yeah. And we were talking earlier today about, like, the bottles that we use for ink.
Yes.
You know, like, we sell tons of ink for years all over the world, really. And Michael, who is in charge of the warehouse and making sure everything's full in there, I can't tell you how many boring conversations I've heard him talking about bottles before. And it's because having a good bottle that's the right grade, the wrong grade, the ink can get seep into the bottle or out, having a bad cap. And the manufacturer of our bottles had some sort of major issue, and we're out of a certain size bottle for a period of time. So we're fulfilling orders with smaller bottles just because we didn't have the big ones. And Michael found some boxes of some old bottles. And he's like, oh, yeah. And then he's like, no, we're not going to put ink in these.
Yeah.
You know, because we have a standard that we're trying to deliver to our customer, for one, not receiving a box with broken bottles. And then also the fact that they can rely on that to put on the shelf to keep the ink safe. You know, it's very expensive.
Absolutely. And I'm a longtime customer, and I appreciate that handling of the ink and the pre-treat and everything else, because, you know, I have drop bottles, and I know that when my product comes, it's in a nice, thick 3 mil clear bag with a zip tie on it. So I don't have to worry about it leaking through my shop. Like, I appreciate that extra step that you guys
Michael
take.
Michael literally goes off the end of the warehouse when he gets new bottles and stuff, fills them up with water, and throws them off.
That's like, great.
He's done that, and he'll build. All right, this one got thrown off 8 times before it broke. I think we're good to
That's
use
great.
This bottle.
You know what? I just remembered that you're the reason that the pre-treat bottles
the labels are
so much different than the white ink.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
When you guys switched the new logos, they were almost exactly alike. And
back in, like, a while back?
When you guys switched to, so probably 3 years, maybe, around?
More. It's when we went to...
But I wouldn't have done that. So
no,
that before
it's
I
Genuine DTG. It's when went to, like, Genuine DTG.
So that's like 7 or 6.
Yeah.
I've been here 5.
So what happened was you guys didn't have gallons of pre-treat. You sent me liters of pre-treat and to make up for the gallons. So I was getting like 4 liters of... And I thought... That was my white ink.
Oh,
one of my guys thought that, and he put it in the machine. So
I like that. One of my guys.
Yeah.
No, it was. Yeah. So that was my call. Was like, hey, I called him. I was like, we got a major problem. And then you guys fixed it, like, instant. It was, like, implemented. And it was like, thank you. Yeah. And it's been great since then.
Yeah. And then that lesson is when, because then I came in shortly after that, because I remember that it must have been within a year.
We got really fanatical about that.
And then because I was redesigning labels, and there was just like flipping out around the building, like, you're gonna redesign, and I was like, I'm gonna make this stuff look good, like, modern, because it was now 3 years old. So and they're like, you can't change the pre-treat, and I was like, don't worry, we'll make it right. and then it was actually funny, like, just a couple months ago you had asked me, hey, are they different enough? Are you sure you don't want to make them more different? So I go in the back with my phone, and I'm on Skype with him, and I'm like, are these not different enough for you?
Hey, listen, like Mark handles the Coleman & Company e-commerce stuff 100%. It's completely his baby.
Yeah.
He mentions the labels, and I'm like, okay, I think I need to see this.
Yeah. Well, that was a costly mistake
for sure.
At the time, for, you know, a small business. Yep. That was a very costly mistake.
Yeah.
It was, you know, $250 or plus,
and
or
time
and clean, and I mean, it was so downtime, no printing, no making money. Like, yeah, that was a very costly mistake, you know. And I'm probably not the only one that has done it, because I just watched someone from another manufacturer that just did the same thing. Hey, what happens if you put pre-treat in? And I'm it's junk.
Yeah, you're hosed.
Yeah,
yeah.
Throw it all out.
And
rinse your machine.
And that's one of the things that, when you mentioned about caring about your customers and treat people, and think, having the forethought to prevent them from making mistakes, because that's what you do when you give the order form to the local spiritware people, is you're having the forethought, because they're going to make a mistake and then it's your fault.
Yeah.
You know, or you might make a mistake and it's your fault, you know, either way. But when you put together a good form and you give it to them, and then they come back with it, then everything goes smoothly and they love it. And that's, you know, what we do when we think about labeling all of our products, everything that we label now. And that was one of the things that we take, thinking about customers in the future. As we come out, we have, you know, when we have this, the printers that we have here, there's an A and a B paper. There's two papers.
Yep.
One's an adhesive. If you run it through the printer, it's bad. So we make sure that we do our best to, in our, from training to the instructions, to how the box is labeled, to how it's ordered, to how it feels. If it doesn't even feel right, you know, we're in manufacturing, we're like, it needs to feel a little bit different, even, because there, if it's too close, it's too much of a mistake. And it doesn't matter if we put, don't put this in your printer on there, somebody's going to be upset at us still. So we do our best to help them.
Yeah, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of pain.
Yeah.
All day long.
Yeah, I get that. So you've got 11 or 12 DTG printers.
Yep, 10.
You've got two screen print setups.
Yep.
You've got an embroidery machine or two.
Correct.
Okay. You've got the cutter.
Yep.
How the hell do you keep all your inventory and stuff straight?
So inventory, I come from a manufacturing background, so it's all basically set up as lean manufacturing. So it's all visual. Our shirts, our stock, our inks, everything. Thread, everything is, you know, vinyl. It's all visual management. So everything has a home, and in that home, it should be visual. So whether it's a small Gildan's, everything has a shop. Like, I'm picturing my inventory room right now for shirts, and I know exactly where everything should be. So obviously, you need everyone on your staff to buy into that, and they have. So, and yes, sometimes they do not buy into it. You know, it's just human error. But we don't do an actual inventory system. I could not do an inventory system. I would literally pay someone to walk around and count things. If I had an inventory system, I would probably have 3 people walking around counting shirts and ink and everything else, and I just can't do that. So it's literally visual. Our left is, you know, like where we keep our white ink is always in the same place. We rotate it in as the new stuff comes in. It gets pulled to the front. The new stuff that came in goes to the back. Same thing with our pre-treat. It always gets rotated
and then
in.
You can see.
It's visual, yeah. It's visual.
You're not leaving the stuff in boxes and putting it
nope.
up there?
With, nope, never stays in box. Everything that comes in, we have an incoming department, and everything comes in. It's right at the front, so our workflow is in one direction, out another direction. So it goes in, flows through, no matter if it's product, if it's ink, if it's whatever. Everything goes down the right side, goes left. Goes, you know, whether it's ink, it goes left this way again or right. If it's screen print ink, if it's pre-treat, it goes that way, comes back out, goes to the printers, snakes back through, and goes out the front. So it's a one flow in, one flow out type thing. Yeah. It never changes directions. It always goes in one way, out the other. So, our shipping and our incoming and our shipping are basically right side by side. So it comes in one side for incoming, and it goes out shipping the other way. So basically, it's just like a big snake goes through.
Yeah.
So, but we keep everything easy, everything smooth, you know. We try to keep it as clean as possible, but inventory is all visual. So like our shirts, our inks, everything. Yeah. Everything is visual.
So you manage your blank stock as well. So you've got shirts that you prefer to print on.
Correct.
And you keep those in stock.
Yep, we keep three levels of shirts. So we have like our standard Gildan G2000s. And then our next step up is like our soft styles and anvils, 980s. And then our third stock is basically like next levels, like 3600s and 6010s and stuff like that. So we do keep a basic stock. And then we also keep a basic stock of hoodies. And same thing with women's. We have a three rule. You know, we have a Gildan, anvil, okay. soft style.
Good, better, best for each
yep,
one.
Yep, mm-hmm. yep. So we keep minimal stock because everything is so it's basically, you know, it's a lot of, you know, you order as you need it type thing. So we try to keep our stock at a minimum, but we know that we can have it there in 1 to 2 days. So
and the small stock, is that for to mainly fulfill small orders and one-offs and
yep.
quick jobs?
Yep. So because we have an online t-shirt designer and we have customers that have online t-shirt designers and stuff. So mm-hmm. we got to have a kind of good selection. You know, Gildan G2000s, we carry like 15 colors.
Okay.
You know, at all times, at least two or three.
And what sizes could you carry from small?
Small to typically 3X.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously your smalls, you might have one. You know, your mediums, you might have two or three. Your large, 2-3, extra large, 2-3, 2X, maybe 2-3X, maybe one. So that's kind of our
small amounts.
Yep. Yeah. Always large to extra large heavy because that's where you sell. So
now, when did you go from? Or did you start carrying inventory from the beginning?
Yes, okay. Absolutely, right from the beginning. I carried an inventory because, you know, we had a website, so I had to have one of everything that
we were
offering.
You were selling one-off shirts
yep.
from the beginning,
yep.
right?
Yep, okay. So I kept a very limited inventory. And the shirts that we still use the same shirts today that we have always used. So we found a good shirt, and it has lasted, and it's soft, and it fits right, and it lasts, and the dye batches are good.
Yeah.
You know?
How important is the shirt? Do you think to the process of running a t-shirt business is the blanks?
Absolutely. I think it's one of the most important parts of the process because, and it's a reason why we have return customers, you know, like for our house lines, is they want something that's soft and feels good. And like, I mean, I've become, from starting this, I've actually made myself a t-shirt snob. Like I won't wear a standard t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, I've sponsored softball teams and they all maybe want us, you know, we're just going to do a standard cheap Gildan t-shirt, you know. And they were like, well, yeah, you got to print one because maybe I would play on the team or something like that. So, and I'm like, yeah, here's the next level or here's a Canvas Bella that I want, you know. So my shirt is always different. I can't wear a standard t-shirt. I just can't do it ever since then. You know, that's once great. I found out, because I started the business because I wasn't getting what I wanted, meaning comfortable shirt, good artwork. So ever since then, I've like created my own monsters. Like now I can't wear a regular t-shirt. And once you wear something nice, it's just like once you drive a nice car, you're like, man, that's a nice car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Everything, you know.
Yeah.
Into that.
Food.
Yeah.
Everything. Sneakers, clothes. I mean, you know. And yeah, you can get away with cheaper things and get away with not as nice things. But once you do find something you really like and then you try to go back, then you're like, well, that's not so good.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of miss even your toothpaste or your shampoo. Yeah. You find a shampoo that works, and, you know, you go back, and you're like, well, this didn't work out well.
I bet you
hair,
do, too.
You know, not that I have a lot of hair, but
it's a good point.
You know?
My wife always gives me a hard time because if we go shopping for clothes, you know, the first thing I do if it's got a design on it, you touch it, you flip it over, figure out what it is.
Yep.
You know, if we're looking for something with her, I turn it inside out. I'm looking at the seams. You know, if it's embroidery, I'm checking to see what the backing is.
Yeah.
I look at it. It's crap.
Yeah.
I get rid of it. I was in the airport, and somebody had at the Tampa International, they had a big smiley face, like an orange.
Uh-huh.
At one of the tourist shops, and it was rhinestones. There were rhinestones falling off, you know, things like that. So I brought it up to the store manager, and I'm like, look, you really shouldn't sell this.
Yeah.
You know, but you get spoiled with what you're...
And I think it's important that if you want to build a business that's not... and this is the lesson that my customers, you know, have taught me, that if you want to build a business that is not about being the cheapest and is about... like sustainability, like they're like meaning that like you sustain your customers over a long term, that delivering out a quality product is the number one.
There is
very, very few customers that we have that when we ask this question, they say being the lowest price is number one. Almost nobody says
we have that. So we've done work for some large manufactured like custom t-shirt places, and you know, and their quality control or what they tell us to do is just not fit into our business model. And we've walked away from, you know, $100,000 accounts just because of the way they tell us to print. Like, print on this. And we're like, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Don't do that. And they can, and over and over. And then they come back and say, hey, the customer didn't pay for this. So now we're not going to pay you for it. It's like, no, sorry. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we told you, do not send this to us to print. We told you it's not going to work out. We told you, don't use this, you know. And it's like, we've had those, you know, like I said, $100,000 plus customers that we've literally walked away from. You know, and even for time constraints, like, okay, you know, we're going to pay you XYZ for XYZ amount of prints. And then they start changing and they start pushing you around just because they're a bigger customer. And they say, okay, well, now you're going to start printing stuff, rush orders, but we're not going to pay you anymore for it. And then we're going to start printing extra rush orders. And then we're going to start, and then we're going to have like super rush that's going to come in the same day at 3:00, but that print has to leave at 4:00, but we're still not going to pay you anymore. No. So we've walked away from, again, you have to know your limitations and you have to know your self-worth of what, you know, what you're going to produce.
Yeah.
And
they'll make you unhappy. They'll drive the business away from you.
Yeah. They'll hold payment because you didn't ship that shirt. It's like, well, we didn't even get a UPS shipment today. And so that's your fault, you know, or they were late on their end ordering 1 or 2 days, and then it holds you up, and then they expect you to print it faster and stuff. So like, you know, again, you have to know your self-worth and you have to know what you're capable of too, you know. And I can't push them to the forefront when I have other customers and other time frames, you know, because like that's another thing. We don't miss time frames. We don't ship late. You know, it's like do what it takes. Juggle the schedule, you know, move printers around, move machines around. Like we do what we need to do to make sure that things.
Yeah. You know, Michael, there's been times where the UPS didn't come. Like, they just didn't come, you know? Like, who knows why?
Yeah.
That, you know, the truck driver forgot. And then, you know, now it's 7:30 at night and you can't... The UPS at this point in time, the truck's back. They're not sending a truck back out.
Yeah.
From the warehouse, you know. Yeah. So, you know, he's loaded up his Jeep.
I do the same thing.
And dumped him off.
Yeah.
And the thing is that you'll rarely be pat on the back for doing that stuff or thanked. Or people just won't even know you did that.
Yeah.
Most of the time, they don't know all the great things you've like really pushed to make sure that it gets there on time, or that you fulfill on time, or it looks right. And you have to. So I think that you've got when you're in business, you have to go into that saying like all the hard stuff I'm going to do is most of the time nobody's going to know that I did it.
Yeah.
But they're going to stay with me. They're going to pay me what I'm worth. I'm going to be happy.
I do UPS deliveries 3 days a week. I mean, I used to do USPS and UPS deliveries every night.
Wow.
And then finally we started getting pickup. Now we have pickups every day. But still, there's jobs that come after that point that I need to, you know, and thank God we're like literally 100 yards from the closest USPS.
Yeah.
So we can literally walk it down. But we walk down bins of stuff. every night because of the deadline and things that have to go.
Yeah.
And it's not like we don't look at it like, hey, it's not my job, but I do it 3 days a week. I have to go up to UPS store and drop off a box of boxes. And I've been doing it now, 'tis the season, but no one knows that I do that, but I have to do it. Yeah. I have, you know, we have deadlines that we have to meet and they have to ship by certain dates and stuff.
So this is a great example for those of you that, like, you know, that you've got the small business, you've got a home-based business, you're a garage printer, and you're competing against guys like Mark. You know, so when you think that there are these big shops that have a lot of equipment, that have a big advantage, and all they have to do is get their people to do this, and it's so easy for them to do 500 shirts, I mean, none of that is true. You know, they're set up to do that. They're you in 5 years or 10 years. You know, think about the business that you're doing now and the effort it puts in. Mark puts in that same effort, just in different spots.
Yeah.
You know, it still means the same thing. He's still driving stuff down to, you know, over to USPS, you know, just like you should. Yeah. So, you know, if you're talking to a customer and they want something today or tomorrow, and, you know, you're going to have to skip the first part of baseball practice to do that, you know, you might want to think about doing that.
Yeah, and back to what you said too about knowing your limitations. There's like you have to find where your point is, where you say, if I do any more, I'm gonna break.
Right.
So I can't do that. So I don't have a problem dropping the stuff off at UPS on before I go home.
Yeah.
You know. However, I'm not going to drive to the airport at 11:59 every night and then come back in the shop at 6 a.m. to start. You know, because I'm not gonna sleep or eat. You know, and that, so don't allow yourself to break to do those things.
That's why I really don't do any work after 10 a.m.
Yeah.
it's too much for me.
Well, I think we spent an hour together. Some of the takeaways I think that if you're listening, you should really think about on this are like Mark's attitude, like, about his business and about his customers. I think that's like, you can't put a number on that, or, you know, you can write down what brands of shirts he uses, and those are all cool things to write down and think about what he does, but there's like an overall attitude about how you run your business, how you want to treat your customers, and really you can hear how you want to treat yourself, like, as a business.
Even my employees.
And your employees. Yeah. You can hear all of that, which makes a good business, which in a way that drives success. Those are the formulas of success that you can't put it in a math equation.
Yeah. I like that my employees look up to me and I'm kind of like a friend, but I'm still a boss whether it's a customer, employee, anything, I treat everyone the same, and you have to put that time in. And it's not that I'm looking for self-recognition or not that I'm looking at a return on my time, but 2 years from now, it will pay off. Yeah. You know, or 3 weeks from now, or 5 years from now, like, that's still paying off, but I haven't done it. Like, I still have that personal touch, you know, and I instill that in my employees too. Like, take the extra time and tell them, hey, you know, your product hasn't showed up, whether it's a contract customer and they're sending stuff to us in 7 boxes and they haven't showed up and they're supposed to leave tomorrow. It's like, hey, your product still hasn't shown up. You know, we're going to do our best. And write that extra email or give them a phone call. And, you know, like, we try to solve as many problems as possible. And we try to talk to people and let people know and give them that personal touch. And whether it's, you know, we just don't want to, you know, just forget about them and be like, well, sorry. That's your fault. You know, no, we try to let them know, like, hey, you know, there was a snowstorm in the Northeast and we haven't got your boxes, but we're still going to try to get it out for you. You know? So, I mean, you need to spend time and effort, you know, invest in your future.
Gotcha. So this is what we're going to do for you guys that are listening and watching on YouTube is we're going to put a link to Contract DTG, to Fat Tees, to Mark Biletnikoff's home address and his home phone number.
Yeah, sweet.
You know, we're going to do all that. So a few things. And to the success story that he did for us on coldessie.com. The main thing that I would love everybody to take away from our time today is that, you know, you're listening to somebody that has been through what you are probably going through right now, and has come out the other side and been successful with it. And the way he did it is really clear. You know, embracing the technology, doing everything right, treating customers well, you know, approaching his business from an organized standpoint, treating his employees well. So everything that we talk about in all of the podcasts and in almost any small business book that you care to read is what he's done. It's not, you know, he didn't invent, you know, magic telephones. you know what I mean?
Like, or the wheel.
Or the wheel. Like, everything that he's doing can be done, and it can be done again. And also, you know, I hope if you're listening to this, and if you need contract DTG, that, you know, that Mark sounds like a guy that you want to do business with. And if you are an embroiderer, or you've got a DFX, or, you know, you're a small business started out, you know, put together your team now of contract decorators that will help you handle overflow business until you're ready to bring it in. And this is a great place to do it.
We did that. And it's tough to find good people, you know. We had to do that at a point. We had contracted out stuff, and we, you know, we still contract stuff out when we're overflowed. And it's you have to have those relations set and someone that you can trust, you know. And don't just pull the plug on the first person you meet just because their price is right. You get in what you get out what you put into anything, whether it's your business or anything else. So be careful. Ask a lot of questions too, you know. Verify who you're working with and you know, and visit them or do whatever. But you definitely need to, you know, because they're a direct reflection of your business. They're doing work for you. They are a reflection of you. So
And it's,
be careful.
Definitely be careful. And it's, and you know, I have to talk about supplies when it comes to this stuff too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had somebody recently leave a review, and they're like, I found this product cheaper online, but you're local, so I'm going to buy from you. To kind of a review, and it was 4 stars, so I was like, but I really didn't like it. It bothered me, you know. So I start doing some research, and you know, talk to the customer, find the product that they were buying, the paper they were buying. It was not the same paper as our paper. It was a different product that was cheaper. And then, you know, you start looking at more and the reviews on that product, a very inconsistent product, you know. So it's an inconsistent product that was marginally cheaper from a company that nobody's ever heard of. And you start adding all that stuff together, and now this is like your business that you're staking $20 on. You know, you're betting $20 a month compared to doing like, well, this is the number one ink in the world, or the number one paper in the world. And you're gonna bet your business on $20. And the same thing with the contract printing. You know, you're taking all this time to build up this business. You finally get a big enough customer that you sometimes have to contract out. You know, you could do a bunch of business in. We got to contract out a bunch because they give you big stuff. And then you just go for the cheapest contractor. You have no clue who they are. Didn't ask them any questions. None of these things. They deliver back a really poor quality product.
Or late.
Both stains. Probably. And then now you have to deliver that to your customer or lose out on the $3,000 or $2,000 you spent getting
the biggest order you've ever had.
That's the way it happens.
And that's what your biggest orders you're using a contract printer for, and this is what you have to explain.
So are you going to bet, how much are you willing to bet your business on?
Livelihood.
Livelihood.
So for the average of 4 listeners that make it all the way to the end of our podcast.
No.
For all 4 of you guys. No. So do us a favor. If you enjoyed the podcast, then please give us a rating on iTunes. 6 stars on iTunes.
Yep.
7 stars on everything else. And, you know, mention us on Facebook. You're welcome to join the Custom Apparel Startups Facebook group if you're not already. We make sure that, you know, everybody gets notified when the podcasts come out. We post those in the group, and you're always welcome to ask Mark Veal and I any questions having to do with marketing or the business.
Absolutely.
You know, just shoot us a note.
If you're not part of CAS, I definitely suggest you do become a member.
Yeah,
definitely for any startup or any new business.
Well,
definitely
tons a lot of cool people, and you'll hear and I've gotten to the point now where I'm just about hard truths online. Lately. And people will say some things, and I'm just, listen.
No.
Like, you have to think about it this way. If you want to win, Like, you got to think like a winner.
Yeah.
You know, type of stuff. So, yeah, please share the podcast, rate it, and all the stuff. Selfie yeah. time.
And make sure you talk to Mark Biletnikoff if you're looking to match a font.
No.
Yes. That is what I'm talking about. All right. Thanks, all everybody. Right. This has been Mark Stevenson from Cold Essie.
And Mark Vila from Coleman & Company.
And Mark Biletnikoff from Erie, Pennsylvania.
Three Marks.